If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Reasons like Zyn nicotine pouches are still America's number one choice for smoke-free, hands-free nicotine satisfaction. Or because you can choose between 10 varieties, each available in either 3 or 6 milligrams of nicotine satisfaction. Or even because Zyn offers a robust rewards program full of premium items and experiences. How's that for good reasons? Now, if you're still unsure whether Zyn is the right change for you, there's only one way to find out. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. You have a lot of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week our guest is retired Army Brigadier General and the former head of the History Department at the United States Military Academy, Ty Sedgell. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. Now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, ZBiotics and Miracle Made, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. James, Trump is trying to take a victory lap on the budget shutdown, but I'm sorry, that just ended because the Epstein-Trump connection deepened as House Democrats put out emails where Epstein says in an email, of course Trump knew about the girls. This was, I think, in 2017 or earlier, saying he even spent time with one of them, whatever that means. This was to his accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell, and to journalist Michael Wolff. Whatever you think of him, the emails are legitimate. There is a reason. Trump and his toadies at the Department of Justice are dragging their feet, releasing all the Epstein files. The president is lying about this. He lied about his communications with Epstein. He sued the Wall Street Journal. They then produced the proof, and the suit is ridiculous. And now that Mike Johnson, the part-time House Speaker and full-time Trump toady, has had to swear in the Congresswoman from Arizona, they're going to get a floor vote on releasing all the Epstein documents. Whether that happens or not, whether all the documents happens or not, this case will not go away because Trump is covering up.
Not only is Trump covering up, just as importantly, the Republicans in the Congress are enabling a cover-up.
Right.
But it's a little bit more serious. So Michael Wolff released these emails that everybody, they're legit. I mean, the White House calls it a distraction. Remember that Michael Wolff said publicly that Jeffrey Epstein showed him photos from his personal safe with Trump and half-naked women, and he also said there was a trouser stain on Trump's shirt. Now, Michael Wolff said that on the Court of History. And we know that Jeffrey Epstein's safe was raided by the FBI. What we don't know is, where are those photos? Were they in there? What was the inventory of what they found in Jeffrey Epstein's safe? These Republicans are out there, and they're going to get sawed off. They're going to look stupid. They're going to look like they're part of a cover-up. They look like a pack of yes men, and it's coming. And I got news for you, Mr. and Mrs. Republican House member. You're toast. You're going down. He's going down, and you're going with him.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if anyone votes not to release those files, they are covering up something. Otherwise, you just release them. I mean, it'd be easy. If Trump was as guilt-free as he claims, then just release the files. And the Justice Department, which Bondi once said she would do the same thing. There's a reason they're not releasing them.
And the inventory of the contents of Jeffrey Epstein's office safe.
Right.
Which exists okay? And you are sitting out there and you're going to get clobbered. You're going to take it because you got to, if you're not part of the cover up, then, well, you're out of Trump land and you ain't that brave. So just suck it up, do your votes because justice cometh.
Well, you know, the old axiom is that the cover-up is worse than the crime. May not be. I don't know that. I don't know what the crime is because they won't release the documents. But one thing we do know, there is a cover-up, and it's, I can't believe it won't pass the House with a number of Republicans voting to release all the files. And when it gets to the Senate, I'm sorry, John Thune, I don't think you can just sit on this. And if I'm, you know, that senator from Ohio or certainly Susan Collins in Maine or anybody else, who has any chance of a competition, I damn well better vote for this or I'm going to be in deep trouble, huh?
So can the House itself, why do you need Senate concurrence?
Well, because I'm not sure the House can pass a resolution telling the Justice Department to do it, and the Justice Department can say that's not an act of Congress.
Well, you can't veto it?
Well, that's an interesting question. Well, Trump can only veto something passed by both houses. It may be the House Democrats will say, I'm sorry, we have the authority to do that. I am almost positive the justice will try to stiff them and we'll have another legal test. But the story, you're right, will not go away.
It's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And,
right.
And Michael Wolff has, I promise you, you just got the, I'm going to poke this hard word. Did I just get a taste or is he just going to leak them out slowly and I'm going to be in the court in a Chinese water torture? And
yeah,
I think you got to really, really consider that he has more.
Yeah, I think you're right. Start your night right with ZBiotics. Now, football season is in full swing, so it's a lot of fun, and we all need to stay in our game. It's really important to be ready after a long night. Now, we speak for a lot of us when we say that after a night with drinks, we're not bouncing back the way we used to. It used to be a big decision. Do you want a great night or a great next day? That's what it is now. Luckily, with pre-alcohol, you don't need to compromise. You don't need to make that decision. To fill you in, ZBiotics, pre-alcohol, probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Now, here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's the buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, then drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Now, thanks to ZBiotic, James even goes on runs or advises candidates after a long dinner or a night spent watching a game with friends. Every time you have a ZBiotics pre-alcohol before drinks, it makes such a difference. Whether you're writing all day, exercising, or speaking to an audience, ZBiotics is our MVP when it counts. Imagine how great it feels to wake up ready to take on the day ahead. So make the most of every toast, tailgate, and touchdown this holiday season. Just don't forget to bring pre-alcohol along for the ride. Go to ZBiotics.com/PWR. to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use PWR at checkout. ZBiotics is back with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/PWR and use the code PWR at checkout for 15% off. The link is also in our show notes. We are so fortunate today. Our guest is Brigadier General Ty Segel, former head of the History Department at West Point, now the Joshua Chamberlain Professor of History at Hamilton College, acclaimed author of books like Robert E. Lee and Me, Dispelling the Myth of the Lost Cause. His newest is Promise Delivered with co-author Connor Williams. is on the American heroes whose names and honors are supposed to replace those on the American military bases that were named for Confederates, traitors. The book has an incredibly illustrious list of endorsements. Ken Burns, Rick Atkinson, Joe Ellis, Sidney Blumenthal, and last but not least, James Carville. Ty, we were so fortunate to have you. James has been delayed for a while, but these bases were renamed by an act of Congress. Defense Secretary Hegseth and Trump are playing games trying to undo this. Do they have the authority to do that?
Well, it turns out that they did it, whether they have the standing to do it or not. And I think it's maybe possibly awful, but lawful. So they probably do have the authority. But it because they didn't just change it back to Confederates, they did surname over service. So we, as a naming commission, by an act of Congress, changed them. They were accepted. And then Hegseth and Trump changed them back to the names of the Confederates, but then did a switcheroo to name them after other people. And I think the most egregious one of those, so there was a Fort A.P. Hill in Virginia. We changed it, and then they changed it back, but they couldn't find somebody named A.P. Hill, so they named it after three people, Anderson, Pine, and Hill, to get to A.P. Hill. It's crazy to overthrow an act of Congress to be able to do this.
Well, but if it's an act of Congress, they should have to get, I would think, congressional approval to change an act of Congress, but you're saying maybe not.
Well, the problem with it is that, and just to get in, I'm not a lawyer, but to be able to sue, you've got to have standing. Standing means that you were personally aggrieved or did harm
exactly.
by what they did. And what they have found throughout much of what the Trump administration has done is they can either break the law or bend the law, and there's no way to go about to try to change it because no one has standing. And I think that's the case here. I think that because Congress passed the law, they accepted what we did, that as soon as this administration goes away, or maybe not, that it will change back. And I think what's really fascinating is what happened in Congress. So, you know, we are finally going back, the government is going back into business, and the two major pieces of legislation are the National Defense Authorization Act. That's the major piece which funds the security apparatus. It's a nearly $1 trillion piece of legislation, and that is what created the Naming Commission, and that's what's going through now. Well, the Senate version of that, of the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, said return the three Virginia bases to what the Naming Commission's had. So that's what Mary Walker, Arthur Gregg, Charity Adams, and also... I'm blanking on the last one, right? Van Barfoot. So Trump changed them back. Now the Senate says you've got to put it back to Virginia. The Virginia name's back to what we said. Then the House, with Republicans, said you should take all of them back. So now the bill goes to conference, and we don't know what's going to happen. What we do know is history is never over. This fight over commemoration is never over, and that's really what we talk about in our book.
Well, it's just so awful that they would do this, so unnecessary. Let's talk about some of the heroes that you rename those bases after. You mentioned Dan Barfoot. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Van Barfoot, Choctaw Indian from Mississippi, the first time we'd ever named an installation after a Native American, was joined in 1940. And then huge, big guy, 6'3", goes with the 45th Division into Italy. By the way, the 45th Division, fascinating. They're the Thunderbirds. But what's interesting about them is that before World War II, they had their patch insignia, you know, right here, was right. A swastika. Because that was a Native American symbol before World War II. Then they change it to the Thunderbird. So Van Barfoot goes in to Italy as a squad leader, then platoon sergeant, and takes multiple machine gun nests, single-handedly killing numerous Germans and during this time, and then eventually becomes a lieutenant, comes back, and stays in the Army, goes to Korea, becomes eventually a colonel in the Virginia National Guard. And when we went to Virginia, they said, please name it after Van Barfoot. Here's a Virginia National Guardsman that retired to our community, stayed in our community, who we love and cherish. And we had, when we did the naming ceremony for him, the Choctaw Nation came along with the Indian nations in Virginia and did a war dance there in at that new base. So
It
was incredible ceremony and incredible American hero who received the Medal of Honor. Just one story about the Medal of Honor. The Medal of Honor, if you look at it, the interior part of it, when it was created, and still for the Navy and the Marine Corps, actually has Lady Justice mighting the foul spirit of secession, holding three snakes. So the Medal of Honor is an anti-Confederate medal.
Wow. Fort Benning, I think it was named after Hal and Julie Moore. Is that right?
That is right. So just to know who Benning was, never served in the U.S. Army and actively tried to stoke secession starting in 10 years before the Civil War, and once said that he would rather have famine and pestilence rather than accepting the end of slavery. So when we named it after, the first time we've named a base after a family. And if it had just been, Hal Moore was great. And if you've ever seen the movie We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson, it's him, the Battle of Yadrang, when he took on three regiments of North Vietnamese regulars and defeated them, and was an amazing soldier, West Point graduate, received the Distinguished Service Cross there, Silver Stars in Korea, a great soldier. But it's his wife that is the reason we named that. His wife sent her husband, her father to World War II, where he almost died, then sent her husband off to war twice in Korea and in Vietnam. And her story about what it was like to be a spouse during the war is what's incredible. So it used to be, Al, that when they went off to Vietnam, that the families at home had 30 days to vacate their quarters on post. So she had 30 days to move from this spectacular 3,500 square foot home on Fort Benning to a 1,000 square foot home off post with five kids. And then she noticed that there were, that all the soldiers started dying. And how did she know this? Well, there was a knock on the door, and a Western Union telegraph came, and she said, "Oh my God, my husband's dead." It turned out to be the wrong address, but she realized how horrible it was to receive this knowledge from a telegram, and she went and followed the cab drivers to where they were doing to comfort these women, and then from there, changed the way the Army did it, forced the Army to do the casualty notification system we do now, which is a chaplain and an officer going at this worst moment in a family's life to try to help. So she led blood drives, and they're both buried there, was Fort Moore, buried together on that fort. They retired there, and they had five children, three of whom served in the U.S. Army. So she saw her father, her husband, and her sons off to war.
Boy, what a deserving couple to name that after. Ty, I want to talk about a couple of contemporary things. You stay in touch with active as well as retired military officers. What's the sense or the morale now of American flag officers after the first 10 months of the Trump administration?
Yeah, I talk mainly to those who are retired, because what I don't want to do is to have anybody say, "I talked to Ty about it," because I'm well known as being critical of the Secretary of Defense. And by the way, I will not call him the Secretary of War until the Defense Department is changed by an act of Congress. There's a reason why we call it Department of Defense. The Secretary of War was just for the Army.
Right.
So, but among the retired people, general officers and flag officers I talked to, It's a sense of horror and of doom. And I think there are a couple of reasons for this. The first is how he's gone after people who have served honorably to this nation, particularly women and black officers, and forced them to retire. The second is how he went after those who served in the JAG Corps, the Army lawyers. And we see that with what's happening in the Caribbean, because it is fundamentally breaking the laws of war that we all grow up with and know. The third is how he is politicizing the General Officer Corps and working to make sure they do that. And that is as simple as hiring his own people to be the secretary's lawyers. And then he's changed the name to the Secretary of War. He has that horrible thing of getting all the generals in one place to berate them about being fat. And, you know, Al, the most important 6 inches on the battlefield are not around the waist. They're between the ears, and our Secretary of Defense is lacking there.
Well, I was going to ask you, let me move to that, because I think you have either served, you were 36 years in the Army. I think you've either served under or closely observed at least 20 Secretaries of Defense, going back to late 1980s. And I'm sure you agreed with some more than others and disagreed with some on some things. But have you ever before, and do you now think, that we have a Secretary of Defense who is unfit for the office?
The short answer is, since the Secretary of Defense has come in, there isn't anybody close. He has neither the temperament, the intellect, or the character to do that. And without those three, that's pretty bad. But as a historian, I would go back to the only other one that comes close was James Buchanan's Secretary of War right before the Civil War, where he sent the artillery and arms to the Confederates to, and in Grant's words, make them available when treason happened. So that's the only other one. But even then, this guy is his level of, I mean, he has no, he really reminds me of Al. There's a great article in The New Yorker that came out in 2008 about his company that he served in Iraq. And that's what he really was his major experience. And so he looks as a, he acts like a lieutenant who looks up at the higher headquarters at these generals and say, those stupid SOBs, they don't know what they're doing. And it's really him that doesn't know what they're doing. But he was in a company called Kill Company. And the senior officers were relieved for killing so many Iraqis. And two members of that company were then jailed, were convicted of war crimes. So that was his searing experience. And if you look at his lapel, he doesn't wear the American flag. He wears the Rakasan, the regimental crest of his unit that he was with in Iraq. And frankly, I don't think he's ever gotten over that. And that's really what he's like a lieutenant that now has been given charge of the most complex organization in the world.
That's frightening. What are the consequences of what he's doing to the officer corps? What's the consequences of creating ideological and Trump loyalty litmus test in our senior officials?
Yeah, I think there are. Well, the first thing I would say is, if you looked at what we did, at what those general officers did, I've never been so proud of the senior leaders in the military as how they acted when Hegseth and Trump talked to them, in some cases berated them, because they were absolutely stoic. They absolutely said nothing. And that's exactly the right thing to do. So in that sense, I think the culture of the military is going to survive this. But in the meantime, those who are serving are under enormous stress. It's enormous stress because they're there to do what the boss says. So I went looking, Al, to find, has there been any military officer, senior officer at the general flag level who had retired or resigned because of policy difference in the 20th or 21st century? I couldn't find anybody. It's not what we do. They do it in Department of Justice. They do it in state, but we don't do it in the military. So they're just going to do and take and execute to the very best of their ability what they're doing. But I think it shows the professionalization and the service of these people, all of whom had seen extensive combat in Iraq and Afghanistan or in services or theaters around it, of how professional they are. But it is going to really be hard because we still got 3 years and 3 months left of this.
Boy, it is.
I mean, it's so hard for those who are serving. It really is. And I think, you know, I'm just talking about this on Veterans Day as someone who has served, but those who are currently serving, boy, I tell you, we should think about them on Armed Forces Day, because they are really doing the most difficult work I've ever seen in uniform.
Ty, let me give you another hard one. You're at Hamilton now, but West Point always is in your heart. The long gray line courses through your veins. The Trump administration is making dramatic changes at the academy. What effect is that having?
Well, I tell you, this has been so hard. And really, I've spent 20 years there to see that what they're trying to do to the military academy is terrible. I'll give you one example.
I would say the
example.
Naval Academy also.
Naval Academy and Air Force Academy as well.
Yeah.
I would give you, you know, the Board of Visitors is that group that is sort of, they're not really the board of trustees. They're sort of the political people that go there regularly to see how the academy's doing. Remember, 100% of the academy's funding comes from the federal government and the Army. 100%.
Right.
So they have got to be, if there's ever anything that they get so upset with West Point, they could shut it down. And they almost did in 1861 and 1863. So first, who's on that Board of Visitors? Mike Flynn is on the Board of Visitors. Yeah, we know, you know, this is a person who lied and was convicted of lying, a retired three-star who has been sort of the leader of the MAGA movement, maybe even more right-wing than the MAGA movement, and was involved in post-January, or the activities after the election. Another thing is getting right involved in what they're teaching. So they did away with the sociology major. They have canceled courses. I started something called the Black History Project to think about the way that we were teaching and the way that Black cadets and officers were there, and that's been canceled. So they're putting back up the portrait of Robert E. Lee and Confederate Gray that has an enslaved servant in the background. That's back up now. So it's amazing. Who would have thought that you would have had a pro-Confederate administration? But that's what we have now.
Ty, I talked about this to you, and I also talked to someone I know, Jeff Smith, class of 1965, West Point, was a CIA general counsel. And the point he made is he said, you know, 20 years from now, some of these young men or women are going to be sitting in the Situation Room, and they are going to be much less informed, much less broad-based, much less knowledgeable than people were who did not have this kind of a crackdown at West Point.
Yeah, it hurts my heart. It really does. It hurts my heart because I know how great the people are there. They believe so much. The mission statement for West Point is so wonderful.
It's
to educate, train, and inspire leaders of character for the nation. How much better could you get? And you can't swing, you can't put a shot put anywhere on West Point without seeing the words duty, honor, country. It's a magnificent organization, and it's going to survive this. It really is.
It might also say beat Navy, too, on that shot.
It occasionally says beat Navy, and we're coming up on that game in less than a month. And, you know, one of the great sporting events in the country is the Army-Navy game. Oh, I know you've been to those games.
I grew up on those games. It sure is. Yeah. Final question. I've asked you this before, Ty. I frankly am disappointed in some of the retired top officers, the James Mattises, the H.R. McMasters. They know how dangerous and how bad this is. And this excuse that former military officers don't speak out, David Shoup spoke out during the Vietnam War, the most decorated Marine of all time. General Ridgway, General Gavin, two of the great heroes. D-Day. I mean, it infuriates me. How can they justify their silence?
I think they do it in two ways. The first is, there was a great article in the San Antonio paper, Sid Christensen wrote it, who said that there's fear. And I have talked to those who are fearful that they will be brought back on active duty under Article 88 of the UCMJ, which says you can't denigrate the president or the secretary of defense. So there's some fear there. The other part is that there is some that this says, listen, I don't get involved in politics. But I don't really buy that, because some of those same people have criticized the exit from Afghanistan, which it certainly should have been criticized. It was terrible. So I think that there is a need for those to do that. From my perspective, I'll tell you what I think. I think that we are looking, we're going to look back in 20 years, and I tell you what I want to think. I want to say I raised my hand and said, this is wrong. This is not the way my country, the United States of America, should act. And right now, because I'm at Hamilton College, I have academic freedom and freedom of speech, and I'm going to use it to say what the Secretary of Defense is doing is wrong, and he should change what he's doing to reflect the best of America, not the worst.
Well, thank goodness you're doing that. You're also in a chair that is named after one of the great American heroes and one of my historic idols, Joshua Chamberlain.
Chamberlain's amazing. He just got through, my students just read an excerpt from Killer Angels, great book about that. And we have so much we have a great military because we reflect a great country. And that's what we should always remember. And we're going to get back to that. But we've had tougher times. And I realize, as a historian, I'm hopeful that we're going to get through this because this nation and our military is stronger.
Well, when we do get through it, it'll be because of people like Ty Schedule. General, I can't tell you, James is so sorry he had to miss this because of a Wi-Fi breakdown. We're not technologically very proficient, but we loved having you, and James will insist, and I will agree to have you back sometime soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Al.
Thank you, Ty. Sleep clean and comfortable with Miracle. You know, if you want to sleep your best, there's nothing better than Miracle's cool and clean sheets. If you ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable, Just take it from us. The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. That's why you need to switch to Miracle-Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep perfectly all night long. Sleeping at the right temperature is a critical way to feel rested the next day, and Miracle sheets truly give you maximum comfort in any weather. Better yet, they make pillowcases and comforters. Plus, thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle sheets require 3 times less laundry because they stay clean and fresh for 3 times longer. Not only does that mean fewer wash cycles, but it's great for your skin. Hidden bacteria can clog your pores and cause acne. So sleep cleaner and clearer with Miracle. Trust us, with no more gross odors, life is a whole lot better for the whole household. Now join us in getting better sleep every night. Not only are Miracle sheets smooth, breathable, and ridiculously comfortable, they don't have the steep price tag of other luxury brands. Miracle sheets feel nicer than bed sheets used by some 5-star hotels. So it's a vacation every time you get into bed. I imagine myself back in Italy, but it's your call. Drift off to dreamland and wake up at the perfect temperature every time you get into bed. Choose Miracle and upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/war room to try Miracle-Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use promo code WARROOM, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/warroom and the code WARROOM at checkout. Thanks to Miracle-Made for sponsoring this episode. The link also is in our show notes. And now for my outrage. The Republican Supreme Court will decide whether ballots that are postmarked on or before Election Day but arrive afterwards can be counted. If they view this as a Republican cause, they probably will rule they cannot be counted. That would be dumb. It used to be Republicans had the advantage with mail ballots. Trump changed that. Nothing is permanent, however. And also, the threat of voter fraud is really a canard. The goal should be to count all ballots that are legally cast by Election Day. Now, let me ask you this. What's the difference between me sending in my vote by mail a week before Election Day and having it arrive a couple days later, and your vote mailed on Friday before Election Day, and then with a U.S. mail snafu doesn't get there until the following Wednesday? The answer is none. There's no difference. Any legal vote on or before Election Day should be counted. That's the American way. Put your politics aside, justices. All right, and now for one of our favorite segments, always the questions from our really well-informed audience. I mean, you guys are so good. You make us think, and you are provocative and raise new issues. James, a couple here that really interest me here. One is, will voters in Louisiana ever be able to dump Mike Johnson?
Oh, probably not. I mean, that district, not Mike Johnson, you get somebody just as odious. I mean, he's such a fool and looks like such a fool. I think there's more value in him being there than not being there. To just get some other, you know, right-wing fanatic in there.
Yeah. So, I read a piece the other day in some conservative publication said he's proven to be a more effective speaker than we thought. He's saying you and Mike Johnson. This is Trump. Trump is the Speaker of the House.
Who said that? That's a, yeah, the most, yeah, pliable, pathetic sit there you can imagine. But you could replace him, but you wouldn't get anything any better.
Right.
And his, at least he's got a certain humor factor about him.
Solange in Montreal, Quebec, asks, why has no American journalist mentioned Zoran Mandami's acquaintance with the Muslim Brotherhood? Are Democrats so desperate to find a leader they prefer to ignore anything negative? look, I mean, he is a Muslim. He is going to have connections that maybe you and I might not have, just as people of other faiths and other interests have. I don't want to judge Mamdani by who his associations have been. He's going to be the new mayor of New York City. I think some of his proposals are unrealistic, but let's judge him by that. I think he ran a compelling campaign, and let's see what kind of a mayor he is. Bud in San Antonio, Texas, asked, if it troubles me to see how Democratic leaders repeatedly preaching to the choir on MSNBC. How can we convince them to speak to their audience they truly need to persuade of their bona fides through popular podcasts and others? But it's a good question. You know, I know some people can in Michigan say Mallory McMurrow, who I think would be the Democrats' best candidate out there, spends too much of her time on MSNBC. That's a very, very teeny slice of Democratic activists. And I think that the Republicans have really done better. They don't just rely on Fox. They're very much into podcasters and other social media, and that's a good lesson for Democrats. Boy, we are so global today. Rutger in the Netherlands says, as a country that just recently held elections and is hopefully forming a government soon, what would be your advice to our incoming policymakers on how to deal with this Trump administration? Hold your breath, cross your fingers, and count the months. He's unpredictable. Flatter him. Tell him he is, you know, he makes Lincoln, you know, look like a second rater. As absurd as that is, he believes it, or he'll believe it when he's told that. So that's the only advice I can give you. And he's going to be very erratic because he has no core beliefs except in his own supremacy. James, our old friend John in Gurney, Illinois. We have to meet John from Gurney, Illinois one of these days because he keeps asking good questions. And he says, have you ever seen a more opportunistic time in politics to go after the oligarchs?
So, first of all, I would not use the term oligarch because people don't know what it is. But I think that the economic, you know, the perfect question, because if we don't do something about this inequality, if we don't address it here, and I mean pretty soon, not, you know, certainly the next Democratic president, and we need a really, really aggressive program of where the 1% and maybe now to 5%
right,
are accumulating all the wealth and doing all the spending. And it just can't continue. It just can't. How it ends, I don't know, but somebody better try to address this in some kind of way, because, you know, remember, we're in low unemployment right now. That doesn't last forever. So the question is right on. I think that you're going to see a lot of, I don't know, populism is just a code word, but you're going to see a lot of aggressive economic ideas come out of the Democratic Party in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And they're going to be aimed at taxing wealthy older people and doing something for the middle class and younger people. I don't know how it's going to come out, but it's either they do something or the people are going to do something. And they're not going to stand for this.
Every time they say that's just, a left-wing propaganda, no one has more forcefully advocated for higher taxes than the rich, or few have, than Warren Buffett. I think we ought to just remember that. I mean, the idea that the rich can't pay, you know, higher taxes than they're paying now is just absurd.
It is consistently the most popular idea in polling. If you say, if someone says a candidate running for Congress, he wants to raise incomes, on taxes on incomes over $400,000 a year and use the money to help young people buy a house or anything, it's 73-75%. They're going to call you whatever you want. But by the way, I've got it. Just set it at 40, 39 and a half or 40. We know what that produced.
Well, Colorado just voted that on their state taxes. They voted that rich people should pay more to fund school lunches.
Yes.
I mean, Colorado.
The issue you want.
Right.
The issue you want. Oh, yes.
I want John from Gurney to keep sending in questions because they're good ones. I want all of you to. We love this segment. So if we didn't get to yours this week, we'll try next week. Please keep sending them in.
Our friend from Gurney, Illinois, asked the right question, and I talked about it a little bit, but I want to supplement my remarks. The level of inequality in the country, in the pain that middle class and lower middle class people are experiencing, is just gruesome. And it's tolerable if you've got low unemployment. But now we're told we're the job market, we don't know because of the government, they don't want you to know. ADP says that we lost jobs in October. You can look at the private data, but the real people, what people feel is a weakening job market, no wage growth, weakening protection for workers, and they're going to keep seeing the 1% or the 5% or whatever it is taking luxury cruises and buying things. And it's just so much of that people going to take, and then they're going to react to it. And I'm serious. I think that, you know, Democrats should have a very aggressive economic program going into the 2028 election. And I think you're going to see that, because if we just keep going and this keeps going, it's going to end very poorly, very, very poorly. So I'm for addressing the economic disparities in this country and for doing it pretty aggressively.
Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd check out the links to our sponsors, ZBiotics and Miracle Made, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.